Next case is 05-1182, Disciplinary Counsel versus David Wise. Mr. Wise.
Good morning, Mr. Chief Justice, members of the court. This proceeding is primarily about four issues. The use of the name X and Associates by an attorney. Situation where commingling is alleged to have occurred in the taking of fees from a probate estate without a court order specifically authorizing the taking of those fees. The creation of a bank signature card authorizing a non-attorney to have signatory powers on an IOLTA account. And finally, about commingling of client funds in an IOLTA account. With respect to the first issue, I had relied in my calling myself Wise and Associates for a number of years on an advisory opinion 95-1, which came out in 1995. It appeared to be the position of the disciplinary council that in order to rely upon that advisory opinion, an attorney, if he's going to have associates, must W-2 them. That language never appeared in the advisory opinion. It appeared to be an over-strict reading of the advisory opinion, for which I took exception. I did, however, early in the proceedings, volunteer to stipulate to a violation of that if any case law could be provided which would indicate that more restrictive reading of the advisory opinion than that which is relayed in the opinion itself. No such material was provided, and therefore no stipulation on that issue was made. It appears that the hearing panel dismissed that issue basically for lack of evidence. On the next issue about commingling of probate fees, it appeared to be the position of the disciplinary council that an attorney who receives fees from a probate estate and deposits those fees into an account containing his own funds without a court order authorizing the taking of those fees has commingled funds. I took exception with that interpretation based upon Cuyahoga County local rule, probate court local rule 71.7.1C, which provides that fees may be taken in a state by written stipulation among the parties, which was the case here, and was shown to the hearing panel in Respondents Exhibit AA. With respect to the signature card, there was apparently a signature card which was produced on my one of my accounts, which was not an IOLTA account. It was just a petty cash account in the office. That account bore my signature, my wife's signature, and another attorney's signature. That signature card was adulterated at some later point. And the issue, apparently, that the hearing panel found was that an attorney who submits a signature card to a bank apparently assumes some kind of strict liability if that card is ever adulterated, whether or not it can be shown that he adulterated it, that somebody under his authority adulterated it, or at his direction adulterated it, or if it was simply adulterated by the bank. Evidently, the attorney bears full responsibility for that.
The bank, your suggestion is that somebody at the bank altered the signature card that you submitted to them for the account. Is that?
Absolutely, Mr. Chief Justice. In fact, what had happened here was this bank had actually changed ownership several times. It started out as Ameritrust and ended up as USA Bank. During the course of those proceedings, a signature card, and I had my accounts there for quite a while, a signature card was generated by the bank. They typed it out and they said, come in and sign this. The account number on that card was an account number for a petty cash account. I came in, signed it, my wife came in, signed it, another employee came in and signed it. Sometime later, the account number was crossed out with a pen and my IOLTA account number was written at the top of that card. I testified at the hearing that I had no, that I did not recognize the handwriting, that I did not know that that was done, I did not ask anybody to do it, didn't authorize it to be done, and in fact, it wasn't my handwriting, and it wasn't my wife's handwriting, and it wasn't the other person's handwriting whose signature appears on that card. I don't know why the bank did that.
There's no testimony. You didn't pursue the bank about who would have done such a thing, I guess.
No, there was no testimony at the hearing other than my own testimony. There were no other witnesses called. Certainly, I don't think that the card speaks for, I don't think it says anything if it speaks for itself. There was a stipulation that this is, was in fact a record that the bank had in its possession. The stipulation didn't go to anything other than authenticity. And I don't think that any inference can be drawn for, any that my actions were improper by the mere fact that this card exists with a handwritten notation on it, which was different. Not only that, Your Honor, but logic would imply that I would not have had something to do with that. The bank itself typed out the card. It was signed. It was given to them. The card was in their possession. If, in fact, I'm the one who altered the card. If, for instance, they called me up and said, hey, Dave, come on down here. We need a signature card. And I showed up and they said, well, tell you what, we've got this old one here. Why don't we just cross this out and write a new number on it? Wouldn't at least an initialing or something like that have been done to indicate that this was something that I had authorized? It also makes no sense that I would authorize that because there wasn't a single check. Disciplinary counsel went back through my IOLTA account for several years, and I produced every single check, front and back copies of every single check, which was a voluminous amount of material, and there wasn't a single check that was ever signed by my wife. In fact, there wasn't a single check that was ever signed by the other employee whose signature appears on that card. So if this was something that I did somehow, I got access to the card, adultered it, and then slipped it to the bank without them asking for any kind of verification on the change. And in the several years since the card existed, the provision that would allow someone else signatory to the account was never exercised. Clearly, it just doesn't even make sense to me, although the hearing panel found my testimony on that issue not to be credible for reasons that I do not understand.
But you wrote checks to your wife.
Pardon?
You wrote checks to your wife and to many others. I mean, other entities that didn't seem anything to do with IOLTA.
Absolutely.
They weren't clients.
But my wife never signed any of those checks.
Right, but let's go beyond that.
Well, now we're talking about that fourth issue about the commingling of funds. Now, I have admitted at the to the hearing panel, I admitted at deposition to disciplinary counsel, and I freely admit to this court today that if an attorney can violate 9102A by depositing his own money into an account designated as an IOLTA account, then I have violated 9102A. I had repeatedly asked disciplinary counsel for any kind of case law arriving at that conclusion, and none was provided. I have still not been able to find any on my own. It is my position, has always been my position, stating with my response to the draft formal complaint. So I certainly had put disciplinary counsel on notice that it is my position that every single check that I received from a client that was deposited into this account during the time frames that are under investigation here were represented fees that had been fully and completely earned by me prior to depositing them into this account. So that in effect, in this account, my position has always been that there was never any commingling of funds. Was there an improper use of the account? Clearly. Can you use your IOLTA account as a general checking account? No, that was probably one of my most foolish actions since I've been an attorney.
Why does the disciplinary counsel need to have cases that explain the clear language of 9102? You can't commingle. I mean, that's what the rule says.
Well, But there was no commingling. If none of the funds were clients, then there's no commingling.
What did you do with funds that you got from clients that you hadn't earned yet?
I didn't get any such funds.
You never took an advance on a case?
No.
You never took a trust amount or a settlement amount on a case?
No. During this period of time, I practiced law part-time and on a very limited basis. I had a very few number of clients. In fact, there are numerous checks that were produced per stipulation. There was never any testimony by me or by anyone that any specific check was a check from a client.
Well, there's a stipulation that you agreed to, I think, didn't you?
There were stipulations that I accepted checks from clients.
Well, it says beginning in about January 2002 until IALTA was closed, respondent deposited personal funds, attorney fees from several clients, and cash into IALTA.
Yes, but there was, during the course of the hearing, disciplinary counsel never inquired specifically about any set deposit, with the exception of approximately nine. Most of them dealt with cash deposits into the account. There was some discussion about this matter with probate fees, which it's a little unclear to me, but apparently the panel did not pursue. My position has always been, and the position in Cuyahoga County has always been, that an attorney can accept fees by stipulation, that there is no court order issued specifically authorized at taking of those fees, and that once that stipulation has been forthcoming, that the fees belong to the attorney. And up until perhaps very shortly before the hearing in this matter, those were the allegations of commingling that I had focused on. Those were the allegations of commingling that were made by the disciplinary counsel. Now, at the hearing, there was some question about, well, what about some of these other checks? But not one single witness was called at any time during this proceeding. One individual whom I had received funds from, in a matter completely unrelated to the practice of law, was questioned on the telephone in March by an investigator from disciplinary counsel's office. Ms. Jackson, an associate of mine, her deposition was sought, and she was questioned in March, but then that request for deposition was withdrawn. And then 10 months after these proceedings were commenced, actually after my deposition, 10 months later, disciplinary counsel comes in for the first time, barely a month before the hearing, and says, oh, we need to do some discovery here. Please answer these questions. According to the letter that sought the discovery, there was a 28-day answer period. At the time, I was in Michigan attending to my mother, who was dying of cancer, and in fact died exactly 1 month after my initial hearing in this matter. I come back to my office, and here is a voluminous request for discovery, and it says you have 28 days to answer. Even before the 28 days had run, or even I think within 2 weeks, disciplinary counsel files a motion in limine seeking to exclude me from introducing the testimony of any witnesses. And I thought when I saw that, this is going to delay these proceedings. I've got a mother who's already dying. I don't want to delay these proceedings. I'll agree to stipulations as to the authenticity. There's no need to bring bank employees down here to say, yes, these are bank records. And that's what I stipulated to. But at no time during this entire proceeding, to the best of my knowledge, were any of my clients or any of the people who had given me these checks questioned, talked to on a telephone, certainly weren't subpoenaed. There is no evidence.
So you basically used your IALTA account as a personal account, alleging or making a statement today that all the funds you put in there were already earned fees and that you aren't, quote, commingling because you did not put any unearned fees in that account.
That has been my position since the beginning. However, it's not correct to say I used it as a personal account. I used the account to run several projects, high dollar projects, that I did not want to run through a regular account. I didn't intend to do that. I had undertaken a substantial construction project for an elderly client of mine. I had material that was delivered. It had to be paid for. I didn't have any checks off of the regular account to do it. I used the account for that purpose. Stupid thing to do. But at no time,
where
in
did
fact,
you, what funds did you use to pay for this?
These were my own personal funds.
You were using your own personal funds to finance a construction project for clients?
Not for a client, not for a law client, for a friend who was not one of my clients. And the answer to that question is yes, I expected to be reimbursed, but yes, I was using my own money.
Okay.
I can see that my time is up. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wise. Ms. Brown.
Good morning. May it please the court, Lori Brown on behalf of Relator Disciplinary Counsel. Quite frankly, I hardly know where to start. I believe that Mr. Wise is in some realm different from reality in this matter. Quite frankly, he set forth four issues for this court to consider. The first issue, the use of the name Wise and Associates, that's not even before this court. Doesn't need to be dealt with, doesn't need to be contemplated at this point. The commingling of probate funds that Mr. Wise spent so much time on arguing here today, that particular issue is also not the issue. That's an example of some of the issues before this court, but that's not one of the primary issues in this case. Mr. Wise also went on at length about the signature cards. This is an example of something Mr. Wise does not understand. Mr. Wise stipulated to a number of factual stipulations and volumes of exhibits. The exhibit notebook in this case was a 5-inch notebook. It's about this thick. Among the stipulated exhibits are photocopies of those signature cards, indicating Mr. Wise stipulated that they were authentic and admissible. Yet at the hearing, for the first time, Mr. Wise now complains that they have somehow been altered by the bank. He stipulated to their authenticity and their admissibility, but now because it appears to damage him in some way, he wants you and he wanted the panel to believe that somebody who we don't know who altered those exhibits in some way. Mr. Wise's claim that he has put his own funds in his IOLTA and that he asked us for case law regarding that, the Chief Justice is exactly correct, as all of you know. It's black letter law. 9102A requires lawyers to keep their funds and client funds separate. They are required to establish a separate account into which they deposit client funds. Mr. Wise, sure enough, established a separate account, an IOLTA account, and put his own money into that. Relator's position is that we have established by clear and convincing evidence that he also put client funds into that account. Stipulated Exhibit 3, are checks that were referred to in one of the justices' questions from Mr. Wise's clients. There, I can go through each check, which I will not do today, nor did I do at the hearing, because the checks themselves were stipulated to. At the point in which the checks came into evidence, the burden to produce records of what those client funds entailed, whose funds they were at the time they were paid, that burden was on Mr. Wise. It's been on Wise since day one. Mr. Wise, as an attorney at law in the state of Ohio under 9102B3, is required to keep records of his client funds. To this day, Your Honors, he has not produced one client record, not one. He was asked for those records as early as January 2004. He was asked for them again in his deposition in March of 2004.
Well, counsel, do we have, this is all, seems like a mystery to me as well. Do we have any evidence in the case that any clients are missing funds?
Absolutely not. No. That evidence is not required for a violation.
Do we have any evidence that indicates that there are client funds that went into this account?
Absolutely, Your Honor. If you look at Stipulated Exhibit 3, which is approximately about an inch thick, almost every check, and Mr. Wise minimized this in his argument to this court this morning, almost every check, and I have the ledger here with me today that starts out Exhibit 3, went to Mr. Wise from a client or a third party. It's not Mr. Wise.
That seems to me to be a distinction with a difference. If they are third parties, but they're not clients, then they're not client funds, presumably.
That's correct, but there are client funds also. I mean, it's
and,
difficult
and how
to...
How did you go about discerning which was which if you didn't have any help from him?
Well, here's an example. There is a check, and this was asked about at the hearing. There is a check dated January 25th, 2002, in the amount of $3,000 from the payor JL Design LLC, payable to David Wise. In the memo portion of the check, it said Holland Retainer on it. There are other checks with the memos, attorney fees, attorney fee, I'm reading through this, legal fees.
Is there a difference? Were you able to prove whether these were, as a retainer would apply, advances versus monies already earned? Because his position is they were all earned before he put them in the account.
I understand that, Your Honor. The only person that would have access to records, if they existed, regarding those fees and when they were earned would have been Mr. Wise.
Is the burden on him to disprove that they were not? I mean, I have some problem with where this burden lies. You charge him with a violation. He testifies, I earned them all. Where does the burden then go to say, you're wrong? Don't you have some duty then to put on some evidence from the clients that said, I gave him this check, this is the date of the check, he hadn't earned it yet?
Are you
simply saying we don't believe him?
There's two answers to that question. 9102B3 requires lawyers to keep records of the client funds that they take in, whether they put them into their IOLTA or whether they put them into their business account or some other escrow account. They're required to keep records of that. Mr. Wise has no records. He has no way, for example, to know whether the check that was payable to him from JL Design LLC was for fees earned or was it truly a retainer, which should be put in the IOLTA and drawn down. I suppose we could have gone to that client and said, you know, what is this for? But that's not our burden here. The burden is on Mr. Wise to produce
counsel,
the records.
How did some client complain? How did you all get into this?
This is one of the very first cases, Your Honor. It was brought to us as an overdraft case, which I will discuss here also. U.S. Bank has been reporting overdrafts and attorneys' IOLTAs to the Ohio Legal Assistance Foundation before state law required the notification. This case came to us after Mr. Wise experienced numerous overdrafts in his IOLTA, which brings us to yet a more important point, and I'll go back to Justice Stratton's question in a moment.
Well, before we leave that point, you say it's black letter law that it's only clients' funds in there, but don't most attorneys and law firms put some money into that account just so they don't have overdrafts? Because if it's only clients' money and if all the clients' money gets paid out, you would go down to zero from time to time.
Actually, the only reason there can be any attorney funds in the account at all is to account for bank charges, check printing charges. They can't keep a cushion in there, if you will, just so they don't bounce a check. That's not the point. That is part of the reason for the law that just went into effect requiring all banks to notify disciplinary counsel of overdrafts in attorneys' accounts. The reason the credibility issue comes up, and there's two reasons that it does. When Mr. Wise responded to the original letter of inquiry in this case, which is Relator's Exhibit 2 that's part of the record, Mr. Wise is about six paragraphs long, and he goes through a recitation of how he understands that he had not reconciled his records, that he had a check that didn't get deposited. That's why the account bounced, the check bounced. So he tells us that the funds that he was going to deposit into his IOLTA were the property of Herman Herman, and he tells us a little bit about why they didn't get deposited. Well, he also tells us that he had a positive balance of several thousand dollars in his IOLTA. He says his records indicated a positive balance. Well, I asked him for those records. I wanted to see the positive balance of several thousand because the bank records showed negative $68. He says he has several thousand. Simple question. To this day, We don't have any of his records showing a positive balance. So that right away brought about Mr. Wise's credibility question. The second part of my answer to Justice Stratton's question, at the hearing, when I ask him about this particular check, this $3,000 check, I ask him why then, if they were his funds, why he didn't then write himself a check for $3,000 from the IOLTA. He wrote himself plenty of other checks and took cash out of the account or wrote checks to his wife on a regular basis. But yet he wants to tell this court that that $3,000 is his, yet there's no corresponding $3,000 withdrawal from the account. I find it very, very hard to believe, as did the panel. The panel described his testimony as evasive, unresponsive, in general, quite frankly, unbelievable as to all of these issues. Mr. Wise would also like this court to believe that he was asked some, that disciplinary counsel made some unreasonable requests of him toward the hearing. The reason those requests were made is because Mr. Wise was not participating as this matter was heading toward hearing. Mr. Wise's brief to this court regarding the pre-hearing activities is completely false. Mr. Wise lies to this court about things he doesn't need to lie about. For example, he tells this court that we agreed to certain documents he would bring to his deposition. The only reason Mr. Wise came to his deposition is because he was subpoenaed. The only reason he brought documents is because it was a subpoena ducis tecum. We didn't agree on anything. Just as happened, as you undoubtedly remember, in the Cuyahoga County bar case involving Mr. Wise. It is clear in this case that Mr. Wise either doesn't grasp the significance of the evidence presented through the stipulated exhibits and the stipulations, or he's choosing to ignore it. It's one or the other. Mr. Wise has, without question, placed his own funds into an IOLTA account where only client funds belong. Mr. Wise has never produced any records that would dispute the evidence indicating that he also placed client funds and funds of third parties into that very same IOLTA account. Mr. Wise should be suspended from the practice of law for 1 year, at least 1 year, with 6 months stayed. We ask for 1 year suspension with 6 months stayed at the hearing that was prior to and is still prior to this court's decision in the Cuyahoga County bar case.
If his conduct is as you describe it, it would seem that a reasonable question would be is why, as you know, under a determinate sanction, the lawyer merely needs to file an application to be readmitted to the practice without any review of conduct. I guess if his conduct is as you've suggested, and the record seems to suggest it, why would we want to permit him to be readmitted to the practice without some review of his conduct? I mean, if he's that deceitful, I don't think I wouldn't be comfortable letting him back in just by filing a motion saying I've completed all my CLE requirements and so forth, and so now I'm back in the practice. It seems to me that this is not really an appropriate request for a sanction. But
and actually, Your Honor, as I was preparing for this argument and as I was reviewing the Cuyahoga County Bar opinion, I can't say that Relator's position is different from what you have just set forth, an indefinite suspension being perhaps more appropriate. We recommended a year with 6 months stayed. We try and stay consistent from one point to another. However, Mr. Wise's conduct in his brief to this court and in his argument today clearly establishes that he doesn't understand the issues, or he doesn't understand the significance of the evidence, or he doesn't understand what's supposed to be done with an IOLTA, which the panel did recommend and the board adopted this, that if he is suspended for a term, that he's required to undertake specific CLE with regard to law office management issues. But I can certainly see why a suspension much more significant than a term suspension would be appropriate. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Brown. Mr. Wise, you've used your time, but you may take 30 seconds.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice. It's hard to know where to begin from all of that. I don't believe that I've been deceptive at all. I've tried to tell the truth consistently and repeatedly. You can tell by my deposition, which was filed here, I was very forthcoming on exactly what my conduct was. I produced every single piece of paper that was asked for, when it was asked for. I answered all the questions that I could. I didn't deceive anybody in this entire process at all. I even stated my, and maybe my some of my answers weren't entirely a direct response to some of the questions that were put to me, but I tried very clearly and diligently to inform the panel what my position was, that these were my funds. They were always my funds. And those are the funds that I put into this account, even volunteering that, yes, that was an inappropriate use of the IOLTA account,
so
but
what,
it's not commingling.
Could you describe the nature of what it is you do today for a living?
Right now, I don't do anything with respect to the law because most of my work was very complex tax cases, which take years to unfold. Since these proceedings have begun, I have not taken any new tax cases at all because what do? You go back to a client and say, hey, thanks for the money that you paid me. We're halfway through your case now, but I'm going to get suspended. You have to go to another attorney. So I have not practiced with some very minor issues or cases that could be quickly handled. I haven't done anything since the commencement.
So what do you do? What do you do?
I have other business aspects. I'm a contractor, and I also have some joint ventures with some other individuals.
Well, that's what I'm asking you. What is it that you do? A joint venture doesn't.
Primarily, I'm a plumbing contractor right now, Your Honor.
All right. That's all I ask.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wise. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.